It's ignited a passion in me that I certainly have never felt before in any other work that I've done. In my work, I enjoyed it. I liked to use my mind. I liked the creative process. There were a lot of things that I found fulfilling about working. This is the first time in my life where I felt like I had a mission.
Hello, you are listening to the Late Bloomer Living Podcast. I'm Yvonne Marchese, your host, and I'm so happy you're here. I created this podcast to give you inspiration and let you know you're not alone in feeling stuck in midlife. I also invite you to join the Age Agitators Club for Women, where we come together monthly to hatch our plans for making waves as we age. Being part of this community for women will remind you on a regular basis that you're not too old, and it's never too late to do that thing you've been thinking about. You can find more information at latebloomerliving.com/community, and I hope to see you there. Hello, my friend. I just have a quick question for you about your bra. The reason I want to ask you this is, first of all, I am a small-breasted woman. I'm going to say that right out the gate. I don't actually need a bra for support, but I have some dear friends who are exactly opposite with me. We're always kind of laughing and wishing we could trade a little bit of something from our bodies. But I know that a bra can be the bane of your existence. I know that when I wear them, sometimes at the end of the day, I come home and the first thing I do is I take off my bra. And the reason I'm talking about this right now is because I have Karen Poirier with me. She is the founder of Imbrago Clothing. She applied her creative problem-solving skills and technical experience to reimagine bust support. She designs chic wardrobe basics for women who are over 50. And the result is a patented system that integrates bust support directly into ready-to-wear clothing. We're talking braless. Women, so if you're big-breasted, do you ever go braless? Probably not. Oh my gosh, there's so much to talk about here. And one of the very cool things that I read in her bio as I was preparing for the interview, she's from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, which she put on her bio as an American city with a long history of hard work and innovation. She says, "I was raised to be independent and to solve problems. If I didn't know how to do something, I was expected to figure it out. And that upbringing has always made me question the way things have always been done when I see the need or the room for improvement." I love that. I love that. Karen, thank you so much for being with me today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I am so excited to be here, and nothing makes me happier than getting to share this with other midlife women who may have this need, because I feel so strongly that we have not had good options and we deserve better.
Absolutely. And I also want to mention, a lot of people always want to know where I find guests or how I connect with the guests on the podcast. And I want to thank you for your very kind welcome to the Celebrate the Gray Collective, which is how we connected through Stephanie Odell. So a little shout out to Stephanie Odell, who is championing the use of models for fashion and in the media who are over 50, who are real women. And that's how you connected with Stephanie, right? Was you've got this brand, it's made for women in menopause, and you were looking for real models, weren't you?
That's right. That's exactly right. And I couldn't find them, because this was something that I never expected to be the biggest challenge of marketing my line.
Wow, really?
And that is trying to show it on the women it was designed for. Mm. Because right now, in general, at every agency I've looked at, other than Stephanie's, thank goodness for Stephanie and what she's doing, you know, the fashion models are exclusively very, very petite and thin and small busted. Curve models tend to be very young and beautiful and young, and also actually relatively small busted, which is another whole thing about the fashion industry. But to find a woman over 50 who's full or busted, like most of us are, who just kind of have that meno body, right? That body type where your boobs get bigger, your stomach gets bigger. I can't find any professional models. It's astounding. And so that's also sort of part of the fire in my belly to make a change here and to make things different, because you know, what we're presented with as women over 50 and what we're supposed to look like, or, you know, either we're supposed to look like J-Lo or we're supposed to be invisible, and right. That's not acceptable.
Right. Exactly. It makes you feel, you know, if you don't look like Jennifer Aniston or any of the celebrities who have been, you know, who have paid trainers and all the resources to keep their body looking a certain way, boy, how empowering could it be if we were to see ourselves represented more? Okay. So I'm so excited about how you even came up with this product. Can you tell your sleepover story?
Yeah, absolutely. This goes back a long way. I mean, at least 10 years when this happened, but it was when my kids were young, and I was looking forward to a weekend visit from close family friends. It was a married couple and their kids. So I'm going to have all the families together staying in the same house, and, you know, the kids were going to just have so much fun, and we were all going to just hang out and chat. And I love that Saturday morning after long week, work week, and, you know, back when I was dressing up in heels and skirts all week for work, right? And I was looking forward to just hanging out in our pajamas and relaxing and making pancakes. And that morning when I woke up, and I kind of reached for my bathrobe, and then I realized I can't do this. I can't just put on a bathrobe over my pajamas completely unsupported, because I realized it would be awkward and obvious that I was not wearing a bra. And that's just kind of when that lightning bolt moment hit me that, wow, I'm, you know, this is going to kill the vibe, because I'm going to have to now strap on. You're going to have to get completely undressed to strap on the full support bra. And once you do that, well, then you might as well get dressed, because it would be silly to put your pajamas back on. And it just was so deflating. Because I felt like I got left out of all the fun, you know? Everybody else got to just kind of relax and show up in jammies, and here I had to get all dressed, and it felt like, you know, another day of work instead of relaxing and enjoying my home.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, and bras are so damn uncomfortable, even for somebody who doesn't have a whole lot going on. Can you talk about the problems for somebody who is better endowed? What are the problems that come with wearing a bra?
Oh my gosh, I can talk about it. You'll have to stop me because there's so much to talk about. But primarily the biggest problem, the worst problem, is the tight chest band, because as expert bra fitters will tell you, 80 to 90% of the support and the lift for your bust is supposed to come from the chest band. And so, you know, logically, the bigger that bust is, the more weight that chest band has to support, the tighter that chest band has to be. So it's uncomfortable even for someone who doesn't have a lot of weight to support. But then when you have, you know, when you get over a double D cup and even up into the higher cups, it's not just uncomfortable. It actually has real physical impact, especially when you wear them day after day, all day long, for decades.
It's right? Actually a health issue, isn't it?
It really is, because there are so many critical health, body systems, organ systems that sort of converge in that area of the body. So number one, it constricts breathing. And I think a lot of us know about how important deep breathing is and healthy, you know, breaths. And when your breath is constricted by a tight bra band all day long, every day, that has a cumulative effect. And then there are nerve issues and skeletal issues and muscular issues and even lymph flow and all these systems, circulation, they're all impacted by not just that tight chest band, but also the shoulder straps, which also tend to dig for all kinds of reasons because of how they're made, what they're made of, how they're fit, and just sort of the physics of a bra in general, which, you know, the basic design of a bra is more than 100 years old and has never really changed. for all the new and improved variations they keep saying they're coming out with, essentially, it's still a tight chest band and two tight shoulder straps that are doing all the work. And that's kind of what got me started looking for an alternative. First of all, that weekend story is what made me think there's got to be something better than putting on an underwire bra. So I started searching far and wide. I searched every bra shop, every online store. I did a deep dive Google search probably every 6 months for years, literally. And I tried everything. I tried absolutely everything that was on the market. And they were all, to my mind, unsatisfactory, because if they were supportive, and some of them were, there are some support camis and things like that, mm-hmm. that are maybe more like shapewear. If they had support, they usually relied on a really tight, constrictive shapewear fabric, which was hot and sweaty and uncomfortable, and really tight shoulder straps. And then if they were comfortable and they didn't have those features, then inevitably you had this just terrible shape. You'd have a uniboob, or you'd have side boob, or you'd just be just flattened down. And it was just really unflattering kind of profile. So I went through all of them. And, you know, when people hear about what I do, usually they'll come up with some brand or some option that they know about. And I haven't been stumped yet. I've tried everything that everybody ever mentions to me. And those are my issues. So I just felt like there should be something better.
Yeah. At what point did you like have your aha moment? Like, well, geez, nothing is working. Why don't I come up with something? How did that happen?
You know, it actually happened over time, because I had always sewn. I grew up with a mom who taught me how to sew. I sewed my own clothes when I was a teenager. I was pretty good at it. And I made clothes and costumes for my kids when they were young, and curtains for the house and all kinds of stuff. So I felt, you know, somewhat confident in my sewing skills, but anytime I thought about what I wanted to attempt, you know, if I wanted to create something other than a bra that would support me and be flattering and that I could wear, I knew that was going to go a little bit beyond my experience and skill set. So every now and then that idea would pop back into my mind, because I'd just be so fed up and desperate for a solution. And then I'd reject it. Like, I just don't think I can. But then I found out about a sewing studio that opened in our town, which was kind of a new thing. Sewing hadn't been a thing for a long time, as we know, right? So I found out about the studio, and it was run by a fashion industry veteran. And I thought, maybe she can help me. So I reached out, and my first ask was, could you design this for me? And she said, well, no, that's not what I do. I teach and I coach, but I can teach and coach you to make it yourself. And that was so empowering, because I would not have had the knowledge or the skill to be able to do it on my own. I could have tried a bunch of things, and it would have just been a hack job, you know?
Yeah.
But working with her, I was so empowered, and it gave me, and she was so supportive, because I was really afraid at the beginning of it that maybe it wasn't possible, because I thought, if this hasn't been done by now, why hasn't this been done by now? Like, if it were possible, someone must have invented it. So I'm kind of worried that it's not possible. But, you know, she never discouraged me. We just got right to it. And I met with her every week, and we just started draping on, you know, on her sewing mannequin, and, you know, playing with pattern pieces and whipping up prototypes. And we just worked and worked and worked at it. And I knew exactly what I wanted. And the number one thing was I had to eliminate that chest band, because that was just the bane of my existence. That is what I hated about the bra most of all, was the chest band. So anyway, it was a long process of trial and error, but in the end, when I put on that final prototype that we had worked on for more than a year, and it fit and it looked amazing and it felt amazing. It was such a eureka moment.
I bet.
I don't even have the words, you know. I feel like the guys
did
who win
you
the
do a
Super
little
Bowl, like,
dance? What did you do?
it was actually kind of low key. It was kind of like, yeah, that's it, you know. End of
Wow.
session.
So now I'm going to go back and ask you, because a moment ago you were talking about, well, maybe this isn't even possible. And I was wondering for myself too, did you have any kind of self-doubt that was mixed in with that, which is, well, who am I to think I could be the one to come up with a solution to something that hasn't been solved? And was any of that in there for you at all?
For sure. Yeah,
yeah.
definitely. Because there was a lot of that doubt. Like I said, I just thought, like, what, am I crazy? Like, and I also thought, am I the only one who's ever wanted something like this? Like, why wouldn't anyone have come up with this? Why wouldn't there be anything else like this? And so there was a lot of just questioning, like, maybe it's just me. Maybe, I don't know. And you know, is it going to be possible? I don't know. So,
how
but
did
you know,
you
by the
push
time,
through it? How did you keep going for a year of this development process? What kept you going? Was it because she was there to kind of keep cheering you on and guiding you through the process?
It was a combination of things. It was the fact that at this point in my life, I was so frustrated and just in so much pain and discomfort from the bra that I was highly motivated. And I believed in my coach. I thought, if this can be done, we can do this together. I think there's just, I mean, and that is the theme, I think, for a lot of women, where we feel so much more empowered together. And, you know, there's a lot of talk about that, about community and how important that is for us. And I have definitely felt a lack of that in my life because I have no sisters. And my mother had no sisters. So I grew up in this, I don't know how unusual that is, but I sure felt like an oddball because I just kind of missed out on all of that feminine nurturing energy. I mean, I had my mom, but I grew up with all brothers, all male cousins. Like, I just had no girls around me. So I grew up like a boy, but, I think there was something lacking in me that I didn't realize what it was. I didn't realize that what I really needed was another woman by my side, helping me, working with me, working together.
There's so much power in that. Oh my
gosh. So much
gosh.
power. And I think that's what made me feel able to do it. I would
oh my
never
gosh.
have felt that on my own.
Yeah.
But it was so energizing and motivating. And I felt so supported that at that point, it gave me more energy. Just getting to start it and work together with her gave me even more energy.
That's so great. Wow. You talking about that need for community and feminine community. I used to avoid female groups. And it was all based on some mean girl experiences in high school and some different things like that. And I always found it easier to make friends with guys. But there came a point where I realized that I needed that feminine connection. And really, it's amazing what starting the podcast did for me, is made me realize how important community is. And that's what prompted me to start to do the summit that I did in 2022, which led me to starting a community for women. And the mastermind program that I'm in for business is a bunch of women who are close to my age. And that makes all the difference too. Man, we are a force to be reckoned with when we support each other and go to each other for help and offer help and ask for help. How amazing, right?
It really is. It really is. And I think I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of women like me are not even quite conscious of that deep need, because I think it is really deep, and it's been so covered up by our society and this message that you know, back in the 80s, 90s, when I entered the work world, you had to be like a man to succeed, you know?
Right. Yeah. What was your corporate career, if you don't mind going into that?
Well, there were several, but my first job, which was pretty disastrous for me personally, was I worked with an insurance company managing toxic tort litigation.
Oof.
It was as boring as it sounds. And I, you know, I came out of college, I studied art history, you know, I was this like dewy-eyed liberal arts grad, and it was 1990 and there were no jobs. There were no jobs. So, and my number one priority was to be able to get out there and live on my own and support myself. So I took the first job I was offered, and that was it. And it was a rough couple of years there. But I did learn a lot. And, you know, you really do use every experience you have. It's amazing how you draw on it, even if you think it has nothing to do with what you want to do in life.
That's exactly why I wanted to ask you what you were doing in corporate, was because I am a firm believer that all the experience that we've accumulated, as we get older, we can take that and repurpose it, you know, in ways that are creative and inventive, and as you have done. What else did you do in your corporate career once you were done with that?
I have worked in all kinds of environments, for-profit, nonprofit, large and small. So from that corporation, I moved into scholarly publishing, which was a completely different thing and much better suited to my temperament. That I found out about that opportunity through a friend, a roommate of a friend. And so that was much more suited to me. And from there, I got into copywriting and marketing. And I started doing that for book publishers. And then I changed industries, and I did that for a couple different sort of education related entities. And then for the first time in my career, I took a position with museums. And so then I worked with a museum conglomerate for a good long time and wore a lot of hats there and, you know, clawed my way to senior management. And then, and that was a position where, you know, I could have just stayed and I could have just coasted. But I was restless and I didn't want to stop learning. And museums are, it's funny, sometimes people think of them as very avant-garde places, but the organizational culture tends to be very traditional and risk averse. So I felt like I was pushing very hard all my years there to try and do new and innovative things, which has always been, that's always been wherever I'm working. That's what I love to do. I love to kind of take what's, you know, tried and true and best practice, and then combine it with whatever the newest tool is to get, you know, to kind of like just maximize the effectiveness or, you know, do something more creative and fun. So, so I went from there to a software startup, another complete, you know, scratch, total career change. And that was a big shock because then I went from, you know, managing a six-figure budget and seven-figure revenue goals to having zero budget and no team. You know, I had 20 people that worked for me, and now I was, you know, a team of one. And then there were a couple more stops, but basically what I realized after the software startup and a couple more sort of stops that I made was, you know, if these people can run a business, I think I can run a business. So I went out on my own as a marketing consultant.
Okay.
Because at that point I realized, you know, when you get to a senior management level, you're spending so much of your time managing. You're not actually spending much time doing the work of your field. I mean, I think for some people, that's their goal. They don't want to be hands-on. They want to get out of that as soon as possible. But for me, that's, you know, that's what got my creative juices flowing, and I really loved it. So, so I decided, okay, I'll just start my own venture, and then I get to do all the work I love to do, and I get to work with my favorite colleagues, and, you know, and have fun again doing in my work, which is, you know, I feel like we all should be able to do that. So that was probably 11 or 12 years ago that I started my own marketing company. And then the Embrago idea came up in those early years. And again, I wasn't originally planning to turn Embrago into a business. It was just something that I wanted for myself. Mm-hmm. And originally just something that I could wear at home so that I could be comfortable, but still run out to the mailbox or open the door, you know?
Yes. Yes. Oh my goodness. So yet, so none of your past experience though was inventing or getting a trademark or patent for something or design and manufacturing, right? This is all new to you at what age, if you don't mind That's me right. asking?
Oh gosh. Well, I mean, I guess I was in my 40s when I started. Mid-40s, I guess. I'm in my mid-50s now.
Yeah. Wow. Hey, we're going to take a quick break here so I can tell you about an awesome resource that I think you're going to love. Here's the thing. We are always works in progress. Do you find yourself wondering, what do I want to be when I grow up? If so, then I think you're going to want to subscribe to We're All Getting Older, which is a weekly newsletter written by Lou Blazer. It's all about continuing to grow and get better in the second half of our lives. We're All Getting Older is a sponsor for this podcast. And I'll tell you, I don't choose sponsors lightly. I get so much benefit from reading Lou's newsletter every week. And I think you will too. She writes the newsletter for midlifers who believe in getting better as we get older and making the most of life's second half. Her newsletter was previously called Midlife Cues, but it does have a shiny new name, and I love it. We're All Getting Older. So if you want to subscribe to that, it is on Substack, and you can easily find a link to subscribe at loublazer.com. That's loublazer.com. And now back to our regularly scheduled programming. At what point did it become like a business idea? When did it go from being, I want this for myself, to, wow, I think I really have something here that's a solution for people?
I think that happened gradually too, because it took me a long time to do it, right? So working every week for a year, whenever I would catch up with friends, or I would tell them what I was up to. And the response was really amazing to me, because again, when I started it, I had all that doubt, like, am I the only one who cares about this? Am I the only one who wants it? But once I started telling people about it, everybody was really interested. And most surprisingly, a lot of my smaller busted friends were really interested. And that was good learning for me, because I assumed wrongly that, you know, you'd only be worried about not wearing a bra if you were big like me. But every woman is self-conscious about that. You know, nobody wants to obviously be braless, because it's a very vulnerable sort of feeling as a
it
woman.
Is absolutely. And as somebody with no need for support, yes, I'd still wear a bra. It's not for support. You know, I basically wear a sports bra all the time, but mm-hmm. It's not so tight that it makes me feel uncomfortable. Still happy right. to take it off at the end of the day, but it's just gives me a little more shape.
Right.
You know? So, yep, I can speak to that.
Yeah. So it was a group of friends that, there's so many interesting revelations along the way. Like, number one, I realized how little women talk about this, even full busted woman to full busted woman. We never talk about this. Right. And especially in mixed groups where there's full busted and smaller busted women, because full-busted women know that small-busted women don't understand. And a lot of times you get a real negative reaction, like, a, you know, if you make any comments or share anything, there's sort of this look of horror that crosses their, you know, you see it flash through their eyes before they catch it, you know, and, you know, tell themselves to be polite. But like, if you talk about like some of the movement and some of the management issues, you could just see on their faces, like they're horrified. So,
really?
You know,
Oh my goodness.
Self-consciousness and really self-condemnation, right? Because again, going back to one of your comments earlier, in our society, the ultimate failure as a woman is being too big, right? What we grew up with, right? It was very much ingrained that if you were too big, or you know, once you pass a certain age, you let yourself go, right? That was just the ultimate failure, because in our society, women are supposed to look 20 forever, right? And if they don't, there's something wrong with them. They've, you know, they're lazy or they're whatever, you know? So we don't share these stories with each other. And so when I started talking about the work I was doing, it opened all these doors to conversations that otherwise never would have happened. And I learned so much through those conversations. And that's when I realized that it wasn't that people didn't want something like this. It was that our needs and desires for something like this have been so suppressed for so long from such a young age that we're not even conscious of it. We don't even, most women on a conscious level, never even think to say, you know, there should be something better than this bra. But, you know, we just accept it because it's always been that way. And we've never had any other options. And we all assume that if there was something better, someone would have invented it.
Yeah. And there's, can I say, there's the Victoria's Secret effect. For women, I think, you know, you've got this image that it's sexy to have on a sexy bra, right? Yeah. It's all, and it's again about the visual pleasure for men. Mm-hmm. So there's that. And it's something you had mentioned in our first conversation, which actually was a big surprise to me, was the idea that there's a perception of larger breasted women that it has something to do with a class issue.
Right.
Can you explain that one again to
right.
me?
Yeah.
That was a revelation to me, actually.
Oh, me too. Not a good kind. When I was doing my original research and in those deep dive Google searches that I was talking about, and, you know, out of frustration, I would just search, why aren't there better options? You know, why aren't there more clothes? Why aren't there better options for full-busted women? Why is there no fashion, you know? And the quote I came across said, the reason is because large breasts never say wealth or class.
That's what you said to me that was a massive aha.
Right. And gut punch for me. That just felt like a gut punch to me.
And I have to say, I think that I have internalized that somehow myself, in looking at the presentation of women in the media, in movies, in, you know, we get these images pushed towards us all the time, and we start to form judgments based on what's put in front of us all the time.
Right. That's right. And we don't see large busted women on fashion runways, and we don't see them in luxury ads and, you know, anywhere where you would think wealth and class, right? It's like, it's been very, very deliberately suppressed. At first, I was just kind of hurt. Like I felt hurt by that statement. Because number one, like, people who have large breasts usually have no control over that.
Of course not.
At right? all. Like, you can lose, there's a lot of women who are just naturally full busted who they can lose weight to the point of being unhealthy, skinny, and they will still have big boobs. There's just some body types like that. So it's really this genetically predetermined thing, and there's not a lot you can do about it. So it felt very unfair, right? Number one. But then as I digested it, that thought, like those feelings sort of passed, and I started really thinking about it, and I thought, that's ridiculous. You know, like,
Right?
we're still people, we're still consumers, we still need clothes, you know? And it just kind of proved the superficiality of, you know, I went into this with a lot of sort of respect and intimidation for the fashion industry, because it was not my background, as you mentioned. I had no experience in this at all. So I went in assuming I know nothing and other people must know everything. And that was the first quote that I read where I realized, actually, they might not know much. You know, they might know their one silo of high fashion, but they don't know a lot. They don't know about people, and maybe they don't care about people, or I mean, I'm sure they do in their way. But this is, it's not meant to be an attack on the fashion industry. I love the industry. I love beautiful clothes and style. I just feel that all women should be able to wear it. Right? All
yeah.
women should be able to look and feel beautiful without having to go through a lot of pain.
And I think, you know, what you've brought up is really, okay, I hope I can get to this quickly. What I do want to point out is one of the things that I think is the key to having energy and for lack of a better word, a youthful feeling, is the idea of putting yourself in the position of being a beginner as often as you can. And it strikes me that you coming into the fashion industry from a completely fresh point of view came in with a beginner mind, which leads me to a quote that I love, which is, in the beginner's mind, there are many possibilities. And in the expert's mind, there are few. It's one of my favorite quotes. Because when you do approach something with a beginner's mind, the possibilities are more open. And so what you've done is taken your beginner attitude into an industry that is well established, that has ways of doing things, and you're busting it open, which is pretty exciting.
That's great. I love that. And I think that is a big reason why I was able to do what I did, because I didn't know. It was impossible, right? It probably was impossible, but I didn't know that. But I did learn through this process why no one else has done it. Because as I said in the beginning, I was like, well, why haven't they? You know, maybe it's not possible. I learned it's because it took a lot of persistence. It's very technical. So it's complicated and it's expensive. And that is not something that plugs and plays well in the mainstream retail clothing industry, retail apparel.
Yeah.
But again, I keep coming back to, I think we deserve.
It's not, I'm sorry I'm interrupting, but it's not fast fashion, what you've done, right?
Yeah,
and I think all. We've become addicted to fast fashion, and it's a problem on so many levels. It's a problem for our environment. It's a problem, you know, for the work situations. I mean, one of the things I love is that you decided to go American made.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah. That's going to bump up the price as well, correct?
Yes. That was another big revelation that I didn't realize. I did not realize how, we all know that things that are offshore, you know, they're cheaper, but I had no idea how much cheaper. And I had no idea on whose backs that, you know, that comes, right? And it's basically women and children.
Mm-hmm.
When you buy, because they are marking things up a minimum of 12x.
Wow.
So if you buy a $60 pair of pants, it costs no more than $5. Everything, fabric, labor, everything.
Wow.
Shipping, packaging, all of it. And when you break that number down, the labor is like pennies. And it's women and children being exploited in all kinds of different environments. Now, yes, there are some ethical manufacturers around the world. It's not that they all are evil. But as you pointed out, it is a big problem. And we've gotten addicted to that price standard. And we think in our minds, that's a quote unquote reasonable number to pay. But in fact, when you pay somebody a living wage and you pay someone by American standards, where they have reasonable work hours, safe and healthy work conditions, vacation, sick pay, it costs a whole lot more, like mind-boggling more. So there is a lot of great educational material out there on all this, but it's, if it's not something, an industry that you work in or happen to have a hobby interest in, it's, most people don't know that.
Right. Right. And most people don't want to know it, I think.
Right.
Because then it's an inconvenient truth.
Exactly.
You know? Exactly. Yeah. What have you learned about yourself going through this process? Oh, learning how to design and manufacture and wow.
Yeah. I mean, I've certainly acquired a lot more knowledge about industries. And I've learned that I was pretty arrogant going into it, thinking that it wouldn't take me long to learn this industry. That was wrong. That was very wrong. It was every step along the way has been a test of faith and endurance, in large part because the manufacturing, clothing manufacturing in America is in such a sad state, because it all, you know, it was just decimated in the 80s, 90s when everything went offshore. Because of all that history, it was very difficult to make connections and find resources, because the companies who remained often still operate like they used to operate in the 80s. Some of them don't even have websites. So it's been very humbling in that sense. I have also learned that I always knew that I was a pretty determined person, but this has been the test of my life for sure, and has definitely taught me that I am determined. And it's ignited a passion in me that I certainly have never felt before in any other work that I've done. I enjoyed it. I like to use my mind. I like the creative process. There were a lot of things that I found fulfilling about working. This is the first time in my life where I felt like I had a mission. And I really do believe this is my mission, and I want this to be my legacy, because we barely even touched on all of the shocking and sad things that I've learned about women and their clothing, because so much of our dignity and our sense of self-worth is tied to what we wear and how we feel about what we're wearing. It goes deep, very deep. So my heart has gone out, especially to the midlife woman, because the other thing that happened, not by design, is that throughout the entire Embrago history, I myself have been going through perimenopause and menopause. And so I am deeply and closely and personally experiencing all these things that hit you, family things, you know, aging and dying parents, children leaving the house, your own body changing, your own, like the whole hormonal environment. It literally changes who you are, it changes how you feel and how you think, and you're redefining who you are and figuring that out. And there are these very dark periods of feeling lost and discouraged and exhausted, and not to sound cheesy, it's going to sound cheesy, I know, but having Embrago on those really bad days has been an incredible uplifting thing for me, because, you know, when I put this on, even though, you know, like you experienced that like crazy, where did this come from? Menopausal bloating, right? And nothing fits. But, you know, as part of why I designed Embrago the way I did, because you put it on and it adapts, this body responsive technology. You know, you can be within 20 pounds, you can change up or down 20 pounds, and it is still going to fit you, look good, and feel good.
That's amazing. That's amazing. I think one of the things I heard you say in an Instagram live that I watched with you was that you designed it to feel like a hug. Mm-hmm. How different is that from the current bra that we're putting on our body with the underwire and the poking things and the tightness and the can't breathe and all the things? Oh my gosh. Exactly. What are you excited about that's coming up? Anything?
I am excited about bringing this to the world, bringing this to women. Because again, there are so many women out there who are so discouraged. They're beating themselves up. They're feeling terrible about their bodies and how they look. And it's really, it's because there are no good clothes, right? The clothes are just not made for them. Clothes are made for younger bodies, and that's it. But you know, we are offered tunics and sent off into the sunset, right? Like, and it's no wonder people feel terrible. But when you put something on that's actually made with compassion for your curves, you look in the mirror and you're like, "Ooh, look at me!" It's an incredible feeling, and that's what I want to offer to the world and to give to women, is to say, you do not have to settle for what's out there. You can demand more from your clothing. You have better options.
Fantastic. Oh my gosh.
So my blue sky goal is to change the fashion industry. There really is no reason that we need to be wearing bras to be supported and shaped. And the conversations out there are always like bra or no bra. And like, it's this choice between like either you're decent, quote unquote, and well-dressed, or you're just all these other bad things that they associate with being bra free and unsupported. But it's the wrong question. It's the wrong conversation. The right question is, why aren't there clothes that can do this? We live in the 21st century. We have the technology if we want it, you know? So anyway, that's what I'm here to do. And that's the way, I am determined to keep this going and get this out there. So I'm just delighted to be able to spread the word. So thank you.
I'm so excited for what you're doing, for you, for your own journey, your own personal journey. I'm excited for what you are providing for women of a certain age, or any age really, right? I'm sure anybody could wear these and feel good in them.
That's
and,
right.
You know, gosh, it's a revolution. And I just want to point out that they have done some studies that show that older entrepreneurs actually bring more innovation to existing industries. And you are proof positive of that. And that is very exciting to me. So thank you so much for being with us today. And I can't wait to continue to be connected with you through Celebrate the Gray. I love that you're trying to use real women models. We need to see ourselves represented in fashion, in media. That is so important. And to have something designed for our bodies, amazing. Massive kudos to you. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thanks for helping spread the word. And if anyone out there who's listening is brave enough, get in touch with me, please. I want to be able to show menopausal bodies. I want to show my products. But as you said, any woman who's fuller busted and curvy can benefit from this. So please get in touch if you have any interest in being part of the ambassadors. If you're over 40 or 50, not picky about the number, but if you're willing to help represent real bodies, you can reach me through the website at embrago.com.
Perfect. All right. You guys know where to go. I will have stuff in the show notes for you as well. And thanks again, Karen. I so have enjoyed this conversation.
Thanks, Yvonne. It's been great.
Well, there you have it. I love talking to Karen. Her sense of mission is so clear. And I love that sense of mission has come to her at this point in her life, based on an experience that came of something she needed, that she pursued for her own needs. How else do I say that? And then has turned it into something to share with other women to make life better. If you want more information about the Embrago brand, or you want to learn more about Karen Poirier, I'm going to have all the links for you in the show notes. You can just go to latebloomerliving.com/podcast and look for episode 178. And yeah, there you go. Another one in the books, my friend. Ooh, speaking of books, have you gotten my book? In Full Bloom, A Guide to Aging Playfully. If you haven't picked up your copy, go pick one up in Amazon. And if you have gotten your copy, I hope you can leave me a review. That would be awesome. All right, that's it for now. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being here today. Stay safe and well. Talk soon.